we present the best of South African radio drama for your listening pleasure in Radio Theatre. And now, Act One of this week's story.
When the moment came, you might change your mind.
I had to be certain that Mother and Father were both asleep.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so strange, tiptoeing through the house in the dark. The floorboards creaked and made so much noise, and when I unlocked the door, the key turning sounded like a cannon going off. Oh, I was sure they'd waken.
But they didn't. And you're here. I've a carriage waiting. In a few hours, we'll be in Gretna Green.
And married.
And married.
Presenting Glyn Day as Harry and Merle Liveson as Beth in The Locket by Annette McKenzie.
Time, Beth. We'll soon be over the border and into Scotland. The laws are different there. We can be married without your parents' consent.
Harry, will it truly be a legal marriage at Gretna Green?
Of course, Beth. Oh, I know you'd prefer a wedding in a church, sweetheart. So would I, for your sake. But the ceremony over the blacksmith's anvil at Gretna is just as binding. We make our vows, and we'll be man and wife. And our marriage will be fully as legal as any other. Legal in Scotland and England and anywhere else in the world.
Oh, Harry. Oh, I do love you.
And I love you.
I just wish... Well, I wish I didn't have to hurt Mother and Father like this. But it's very romantic to be eloping, isn't it?
I suppose it is. And one day, when we're old, we'll tell our grandchildren of how we ran away and were married at Gretna Green. And they look at us with wonderment because they'll be able to see that we still love each other after all the years.
Harry.
I'll never stop loving you, Beth. Never.
Solemn, Mrs. Fairfax. What are you thinking about, Beth?
I was thinking about this inn. How happy we've been here this last week. Oh, I'll always remember it. I'll always remember this room. The white curtains on the window. The vase of flowers on the table. I'll remember every detail. And when you're gone, if ever the loneliness becomes too much for me, I'll close my eyes and relive every minute, every happy memory.
Neither of us will have to live on memories, Beth. We have the rest of our lives to be happy together.
Except for the next few months. Oh, Harry. I wish you didn't have to go away. I'm going to miss you. I don't know how I'm going to live without you.
We mustn't spoil our last day together by being sad and miserable. I'll only be gone a little while, and the time will pass so quickly. I'll be back before you know it. And once we're together again, we'll forget that I was ever away.
I'll be counting every minute till you come back.
You're still looking solemn. And sad. Would this make you smile, I wonder.
What is it?
A present. Open it.
Oh. Oh. A gold locket. Oh, Harry.
You like it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Let me fasten it on for you.
It's engraved, Beth, Harry, forever.
And that's the truth. And this isn't just an ordinary gold locket.
Oh, it's the most beautiful locket in the world. Because you gave it to me.
That's not what I meant. There, it's fastened. And you must wear it always. Because this locket is a kind of talisman. And every time you touch it or look at it, you'll know that wherever I am, I'm thinking of you.
I'll always wear it, Harry. But I wish you didn't have to go.
And I wish I didn't have to go. But it's for us, Beth.
I know, Harry.
But you'll never really know how much I love you.
Harry.
The innkeeper said we'd find you in here.
Oh, you deceitful, ungrateful girl. That a daughter of mine could even think of such a thing. Running off with a low, common, good-for-nothing sailor.
Mother, please.
I never thought I'd live to see the day. And there you stand, as bold as brass, holding hands with a ruffian. Come over here at once, Beth. You're coming with me. And we'll leave your father to attend to that monster.
I'll thank you to speak more civilly to my wife, Mrs. Greenwood. I want no quarrel with you or your husband. But I'll stand for no more insults. So just guard your tongue.
I think I'm entitled to speak to my own daughter.
Only with her husband's permission. When I came to your house in an honest manner, you turned me away, threatening to have the law on me. The law's on our side now. On the 8th of May, in this year of grace, 1840, Beth and I were married. I am her legal husband.
You may call yourself her husband, but I've another name for a man who entices a 17-year-old girl away from her home and parents.
He didn't entice me away. I love him, Father.
Oh, Beth, to run away in the middle of the night and without even a note. We've been searching everywhere for you, distracted with worry. How could you have behaved in this way?
Because you didn't approve of Harry. You wouldn't even let me mention his name, so I had to run away.
You've ruined your whole life. You're married now. There's no turning back.
I don't want to turn back. I love Harry and he loves me.
For how long? What sort of life can he offer you? What kind of a husband is he going to make?
Will you stop talking as if I weren't here? I know that I'm not good enough for Beth. But she's my wife now. Whether you approve or whether you don't. She trusts me to look after her. And that's what I'm going to do.
And how do you intend to look after her? Tell me that.
The best way I can.
But your best may not be good enough. How old are you, Mr. Fairfax?
I'm 24. 24.
Your boyhood left far behind you. And what have you achieved in life so far?
Well, Well, nothing very much, I suppose. I was an orphan, you see. I've been on my own since I was 10. I've been knocking around the world ever since. But I never had anyone to work for before. I never had a goal. Now I have. And that's a difference. I'm going to work my way up the ladder for Beth. So that she can be proud of me. One day, we'll have a little business of our own. That's my ambition now. And a house of our own, too. I want Beth to have everything her heart desires.
Those are daydreams. In practical terms, what can you offer Beth? What can you offer her now?
I'm signed up on a ship. I'll be leaving tomorrow for Dundee. Money's good, and I'm going to save every penny of it.
I'm glad that you mentioned money. Tell me, what do you expect Beth to live on while you're away?
Everything I have is Beth's. Here, Beth.
Harry. Harry, you can't go with nothing in your pocket. You can't go without any money at all.
Nor could you exist for very long on the small sum that's lying on that table, Beth.
It would have been more, except that Harry bought me this locket. It's real gold.
And doesn't that prove to you how feckless he is? wasting money on trinkets when it might be needed to buy bread. I know his type. They can charm the birds off the trees, and it's laughter and kisses and gold lockets while the sun's shining. But when the sun disappears, so do they. But there's no depth to them.
Harry won't disappear. He'll come back to me.
That's the one thing that's certain in this world. I'll be back, Beth, and with money in my pocket. Money enough so that you can live like the finest lady in the land.
Until that day comes. I think that Beth will be safer and happier at home with us, Mr. Fairfax. Married she may be, but we'll not stand by and let our daughter starve. And I don't think you would want her living alone and unprotected while you were at sea, would you?
Your father's right, Beth. I should have given more thought to it. You can't live in lodgings all by yourself. It's better that you go home with your parents till I come back.
Aren't you? But it's very precious. Almost as precious as you. It's really a magic locket, you see. And when I look at it or touch it, your father knows that I'm thinking of him. And he thinks of me, no matter how far away he is.
For all we know, he could be in China, and never a note from him. Not even two lines scribbled on a scrap of paper.
Oh, he may have written, Mother. But sailors' wives rarely receive any word. Ships sail to such faraway places. Ah, and the voyages take so long.
Well, you were a wife for a week, and now you have a son. And your husband doesn't even know that he's a father.
He'll be so proud to know that he has a son.
If he ever comes back to find out.
You're being unfair, Mother. You know how long a voyage can last. Sometimes 2 or 3 years.
I didn't mean to upset you, Beth. Every sailor's wife has to sit at home and wait. I spoke too sharply. My nerves are on edge. Your father isn't well at all, and I'm worried about him. Now, let me nurse baby for a while, and you go and have a little walk in the garden. Manage as best we can.
Until Harry comes home.
Life is going to seem strange without your father.
To bring him all this way for nothing. He says that Harry is the healthiest 8-year-old in the district. But it was a nasty bump on his forehead, and I'm glad the doctor had a look at it.
Just a scratch, he said. But he stayed for over an hour. You know as well as I do that it's you he came to see.
He's a good friend to us.
He wants to be more than a friend to you, Beth. He wants to marry you. And it's time you gave him the opportunity of asking you.
He has asked me.
Beth! Oh! You didn't refuse him.
Oh, Mother, I already have a husband.
Where?
I don't know.
He's presumed dead. You're a widow. And you're not a child anymore, Beth. It's time you put all the sentimental nonsense behind you. You were married for 1 week. And what did you get out of it? A gold locket, which you treat like a holy relic, and a fine son who needs a father.
Mother, I...
No, Beth, it's time you listened to me. You can't live on romantic memories. You're still a young woman. You could still have a happy life with a home and a husband and brothers and sisters for your little boy. And a boy needs a man's hand to guide him. It's bad for little Harry to be brought up by a doting mother and grandmother. Geoffrey Sanford's a good man. And you're fond of him, aren't you?
Yes.
And you wish what's best for your child. So I wish what's best for you both. Little Harry's full of charm and mischief. And he wraps both of us around his little finger. Neither of us can say no to him. We spoil him dreadfully. And we could be the means of ruining his life.
Oh, Mother, I know that you love my child as much as you love me.
I do, Beth. And I say to you that holding on to memories can sometimes be a form of selfishness and nothing more.
Do you really think it would be best for little Harry if I married Geoffrey?
I think it would be best for both of you.
Just a man who's been walking many miles. I'm thirsty. All I ask is some water to drink.
Water, you say? Quiet, Bruno! Sergeant, enough!
It wouldn't be so hard-hearted as to refuse a weary traveller a sip of water.
Well, there's the pump. Help yourself.
Oh, thank you.
You've been travelling, you say?
All my life.
A long journey. Not a very successful one by the looks of it. But there you are. A rolling stone gathers no moss, as they say.
And they say rightly. At least in my case. I've sailed the world, chasing after a pot of gold.
I thought that was at the end of the rainbow.
More than likely. For I've never found it.
You've seen hard times, have you?
Little else. Some of them came unasked. Some I went out to meet. Unknowingly, of course. You think that your luck has changed, and maybe it does for a while. That's the most dangerous time of all. You take chances, you see, thinking the luck will hold. Just when you need it most, it vanishes. You left high and dry.
Sit down and rest yourself for a bit. You look tired.
you, ma'am. A kind word is one of the most valuable things on earth. That's one lesson I've learnt.
How far are you travelling?
I'm not sure. I'll only know if I reach the end of my journey.
Is there someone waiting for you?
There may be. I hope she's still there. Hope is the last thing to go. It's about all I have left now.
The she you mentioned, would that be your wife?
Yeah. My wife. I left her to go out and conquer the world. But it was the world that conquered me. Many's the time I've longed to go to her. But my pride wouldn't let me. I wouldn't go back till I could offer her the sun and the moon tied up in the stars.
But you're going back now.
Now. When I have nothing. Now that I am nothing. And know it. Yeah. I'm going back. Maybe this is a turning point I've been searching for all these years. Maybe she can show me the way.
Well, I hope it turns out as you want it to. And why shouldn't it? The longest road has an end to it. And talking of roads, maybe I can help you a mile or two on yours. If you're going straight on, that is.
I'm going straight on.
I'm taking the horse and trap into the village, so you can ride with me as far as there.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I'm much obliged.
Well, you're welcome. And I'm sorry I mistook you for a thieving rogue at first. I can see in your eyes that you're far from being that. And I'd be the last to condemn a man for his bad fortune. Who would be poor and ill-dressed if they could have it otherwise? You could do with a bite of food, I dare say. I'll fix something for you and put on my bonnet and we'll be on our way.
Beautiful blue sky. Be hot later on, I shouldn't wonder. The sun's already warming the day.
It is indeed. Well, happy the bride the sun shines on. A good omen for the wedding.
So you're off to a wedding, are you? I wondered when I saw the roses on your bonnet.
My best bonnet, in honor of the occasion.
Is it a relative being wed?
No, not a relative. But someone the whole village honors. Our Dr. Sanford. Oh, such a gentleman he is. Kindness itself. You'd never believe a young man like that could have such an understanding of people.
I can see he's a favourite of yours.
He's everyone's favourite. A heart that's as warm as a fire in winter. And no memory at all for bills when it's a poor man that's owing the money. Kindness itself. And handsome into the bargain. Every unmarried girl for miles around will be envying Beth Fairfax as she walks down the aisle.
Beth? Who?
Beth Fairfax. Why? Do you know the name?
I once knew a girl called Beth. Long time ago.
Thousands of mothers name their daughters Beth.
Yeah, I suppose they do. But tell me more about the bridal pair.
You're being very civil, pretending an interest when I've been chattering on with village gossip. Talking about people who are strangers to you.
Oh, there's something homely in hearing village gossip after all these years. So tell me about the wedding. You've spoken about the bridegroom. What of the bride?
Oh, very nice. Good-looking woman. Quiet and mannerly. But it came as a surprise to all of us when we heard that she and Dr. Sanford were to wed. He could have taken his pick from the entire county. But instead of a young single girl, he chose a widow with a child.
A widow? With a child?
She was married once before. Very young. I never heard exactly what happened to the husband, but it seems that he died not long after he put the ring on a finger. Though I say it, he shouldn't. A first marriage was a bit of a scandal at the time. It was a runaway match, you see. Though her parents went after her, she was already wed when they found her. And that was that.
And she was left a widow.
Which was maybe a blessing in disguise. From the little I've heard, the man didn't amount to much. Well, her troubles are over now. Marrying a fine man like Dr. Stanford. He'll be a good husband and a sound father for her son. And you know, although it's only village gossip I'm recounting, there's a lesson in it. For years, Beth Fairfax has lived a lonely life. Not that she's had to fend for herself, because her parents looked after her. But all the same, to be widowed so young and left with a boy to rear, it's not the position a girl would choose to be in. We all thought the pattern of her life was set. Then fate suddenly molded it into a new shape. You see what I'm getting at? Maybe your life is due to take on a new shape very soon. Well, here we are. And it must be later than I thought. They've all gone into the church already. I must hurry or I'll miss the start of the service.
I'll tie up the horses for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And good luck to you.
Lying down this barrel.
Well, what do you want me to do about it? He'd probably have one too many. Or maybe a dozen or so too many. There you always find drunken sailors on a quayside.
I don't think he's drunk, Charlie, but he looks real bad.
Oh, let's take a look then. It's old Harry Fairfax. That's who it is.
You know him then?
He was on the first ship I ever sailed on. He weren't no youngster even then. Hey, hey, Harry. Do you remember me, Harry? Charlie Towsing.
He's in a bad way.
A valiant. I signed on the Valiant.
So are we. We're on the same ship. We're shipmates, Charlie. We can't leave the poor old man here. We're due to sail on the tide.
Who said we were leaving him here? Come on. Between us, we'll get him aboard.
Too hopeful. I suppose that's why he asked us to stay with him.
You're a green one and no mistake, Bill. It wasn't to keep old Harry company we were asked to sit here. It's because he has a fever.
and the doctor doesn't know what kind of fever.
You mean it might be catching?
Might be. And if it is, they wouldn't want it to spread. In case some of the passengers got it too. There's some important people on board. A brilliant young doctor amongst them. Perhaps a ship's doctor will get him to take a look at old Harry and see if the fever's infectious or not.
He seems to be asleep now. Sorrowful end for an old sailor.
He's not dead yet. And where there's life, there's hope. That's something old Harry never seemed to have.
Hope?
I remember someone telling me once that when old Harry was a young man, he was full of enthusiasm and plans, but then, for some reason, he just didn't care anymore. And he just went where the wind blew him.
A ship without a rudder. I gave away the hope that had sustained me.
What did you say, old man?
I hope she was happy.
Are you thirsty? Would you like some water?
Yeah. Water, please.
You'll soon be as right as rain, old man. You've still a few voyages ahead of you.
Of course you have. And you'll be going back to visit your favourite ports.
Yes, you must have seen a few in your time.
In the carriage. Riding through the night.
What did you say, old man?
The blacksmith's anvil. Ceremony over the blacksmith's anvil. Just as legal.
His mind's beginning to wander a bit.
As legal as any wedding in a church.
Hey, he said something about a church. Maybe we should call a padre.
Did she ever look at the locket and remember me?
Yeah. Must have been a good-looking bloke when he was young. I bet he had a string of girls waiting for him. Did you have a sweetheart in every port then, old Harry?
She never knew that I was there. Outside. I could hear the music.
I think he's getting worse, Charlie. Maybe we should give the ship's doctor a shout.
Maybe we should.
Physician like yourself, sir. I'd have no right to inconvenience a passenger like this, please.
If I can be of service, I'm only too glad. There is no inconvenience, I assure you.
Oh, you're very kind, sir. The symptoms are unfamiliar to me. You see, my chief fear is that the fever might spread to other members of the crew, or even to the passengers.
Let me first examine the man, and then we'll discuss what precautions to take, if necessary. He is the only victim so far?
Aye, the only one. And he was obviously suffering before he came on board. I can't think why he was signed on. His general physical condition is very poor. And if the fever should spread, we'll be forbidden to land when we reach port.
If the fever spreads, it may not be infectious. And it's encouraging that there are no other cases so far.
This way. He's in here with two of his friends. Since they were in close contact, I thought it best to isolate them from the rest of the crew.
See how the pulse is.
This is one of our most distinguished passengers. an eminent physician who has been
cleared. If you please, Doctor. I think he's too far gone to care how many physicians are at his bedside. The pulse is weak. Very weak.
Closer. Ben, closer.
Did you speak? Can you understand what I'm saying? Can you tell me your name?
Harry.
Kurt. You do understand me. My name's Harry, too. Disturb him further. He won't last the night. We'll leave him in peace. But the fever's not in much. I've seen many similar cases. He's in an advanced state. Just heard Glynday as Harry and Merle Liveson as Beth in The Locket by Annette McKenzie. The cast included John McKenzie, Joyce Bradley, Gary Carter, John Dennison, Greg Latter, and Annette McKenzie. Sound effects by Johan Stassen. Audio recording by Lucky Ulafir. Directed by Andre Botmer.
Listen again next week for another play from the archives of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa in Radio Theatre.